Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Ma'at-Hotep, to everyone. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, also known as Dr. Belay, and it is June the 12th, 2021. And all over the country, it seems like the corona crisis is beginning to subside some. Here in Philadelphia, the restrictions have been lifted in a lot of different ways. People are able to go into certain kinds of facilities without their mask on. And, you know, it's they're trying to get back to business as usual. Well, I don't believe it's going to ever be business as usual again. And not that we need for it to be, but certainly we can expect for things to get worse. This corona situation helped many to really get a much clearer understanding, overstanding of some very, very serious things. And we're going to now see who has paid close attention and will be preparing in the future, excuse me, accordingly. At any rate, tonight, we're going to talk about a couple of things. One in particular, Juneteenth, which, of course, is next Saturday, June 19th. But, you know, there's a little controversy around the Juneteenth observance or meaning, or, you know, should Black folks really be that enthused about it? Well, I'm going to let you determine that. But we're going to talk to a brother who has been really the key instrument in the Juneteenth celebration commemoration here in Philadelphia, long before it became popular as it is today. So we're going to talk to Brother Ron Brown, who is the founder of the Philadelphia / Pennsylvania Juneteenth Coalition. He'll be joining us shortly. And we're going to get some history, some stuff I'm kind of sure you haven't heard, at least when I began to become more acquainted with the Juneteenth observance, with the presentation that Brother Ron Brown gives. Certainly it goes a whole lot more into some history than most of what I've seen and heard. So you might kind of get some information that might be applicable to something that you are thinking about or trying to do, or just, you know, if you're just into history, there's some stuff that I found to be kind of interesting. Anyway, we're going to talk to Brother Ron Brown about that very shortly. Also, of course, next week will also be the observance of what some call Father's Day. Well, needless to say, the appreciation for our Black men is something that MWM has certainly upheld over these years that we've been in existence, and certainly Black women have appreciated our fathers, our brothers, our uncles, and so forth in general, period. And so with the observance of Father's Day, I found it very interesting when I ran across something that was to commemorate Black fathers. I was really, when I saw that, I was like, now see, now that right there is what I'm talking about. If we're going to commemorate these days, we need to at least specify who and what we're talking about. And so in this particular situation, we're going to talk to a brother by the name of Charles Hicks, who is based in the D.C. area, and he's going to tell us about the observance that they are getting ready to do called Black Father's Day Celebration, okay? So, that should be pretty interesting, and I think we definitely are going to, you know, hear some really, again, really good information. Okay, before we do that, what I'd like to do is remind you that September the 4th, we will be observing, not just observing, but it'll be our first mass assembly for the We Charge Genocide 21 Reparatory Justice Project, and it will be at the United Nations. This is a 3 to 5 year project, so people will be very, I think, surprised to see what we begin with, what we are getting ready to start off with. And that is with our first million signatures that will be taken to the United Nations in December. The first mass rally or mass assembly will take place at the United Nations in September, to be specific, September the 4th. This is an action that will begin to bring, a kind of focus on the issue of reparatory justice. But in the context of 400 plus years of not just inhumane treatment, but the institution, the legal institution of slavery in the U.S. We want to make sure that the world knows about it and how it has affected our people as a result of it and what is really happening with it today, meaning it is in a sophisticated manner that we are now experiencing what we call genocide in the 21st century, which again is a very fine-tuned systemic application of eugenics, ethnic cleansing, and social engineering that is totally destructive, or at least it's meant to be totally destructive, to Black folks, people of African descent. I didn't say people of color. I'm being very specific because it's only us who was literally kidnapped and brought here. And while, yes, there was already Africans here, we acknowledge that, we embrace that, but, you know, the reality is they, too, for the most part, were also put in enslavement as well. So either way you look at it, we're talking about something that is, you know, about what has happened to our people in this land called the United States of America, be it corporation or nation, whichever you prefer. Still remains the treatment, the atrocities, let's put it that way, because treatment doesn't hit it. The atrocities that have been inflicted upon our people is like none other. And we must address it accordingly. And so we shall. Okay, so with that said, the We Charge Genocide 21 Project, again, will be holding its first mass assembly at the United Nations September 4th, Saturday, September 4th, starting at 12 o'clock noon. It will begin the launching of our grassroots boots on the ground initiative, whereby people all over the country will be really putting forth an effort in obtaining the million signatures that will be taken to the United Nations in December. Somewhere between December 10th and the 17th, we plan to take those signatures to the United Nations with a delegation of 400-plus folk. And the 400-plus folk are primarily representing a variety of groups and organizations and so forth that are either doing so-called social justice work, civil rights work, human rights work, et cetera. It's going to be union representatives. It's going to be political folk. You name it. There will be, again, 400-plus delegates that will be taking those signatures to the United Nations. If you are interested in either being a part of the delegation or someone that you know of in your group, organization, wants to be represented, or if you'd like to participate in some other kind of way, volunteer, or be a part of a task force or what have you, by all means, feel free to contact us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. Or you can email us at nbhrproject@gmail.com. Again, nbhrproject@gmail.com. Okay, let's see what we got going on. I think that was all of the announcements that we wanted to give you for right. Oh, no, it's not. One other announcement. Okay, here in Philadelphia, there. Oh, by the way, this is National Black Music Month. And it just so happened that one of the key persons that put National Black Music Month on the calendar is a sister by the name of Deanna Williams. Deanna Williams is known for her work here in Philly and nationwide as it pertains to black music. And we will be paying tribute to her and several other what we call Sistars with Voices in October as a part of the MWM 24-year anniversary. We're talking about black women who were known for their vocal talents and related musical talents that either were born in Philadelphia or, you know, spent time in Philadelphia, et cetera. So, again, in October as a part of our 24-year anniversary commemoration, we will be paying tribute to Sistars with Voices, those who are in the Philadelphia area in particular, who, again, lived here, were born here, et cetera. Now, this month, we will announce that officially at the end of the month, being Black Music Month, as we pay tribute to Philadelphia International Records. Philadelphia International Records is commemorating its 50th year commemoration. And so we are going to pay a special tribute to Philadelphia International in recognizing their contribution to black music, R&B, all forms of music, but R&B in particular, soul music in particular. And so for those who are familiar with Teddy Pendergrass, the OJs, the Delphonics, the Intruders, the Stylistics, the Five Stair Steps. Again, these are what's known as Philly groups who primarily were on, at some point, the Philly International label. Of course, it was founded by Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff. And they, along with others, developed some incredible, incredible music during the 1970s, 80s. And, of course, you know, many came to Philadelphia to record. Lou Rawls, Michael Jackson, it's a whole Stevie Wonder. A lot of folks, Philly was a happening place when it came to music. 50 years ago. And you know, it still has somewhat of the flavor, but a lot has changed, as in most cities. But at any rate, we are going to commemorate that because we always want to embrace history as it pertains to our people, the great achievements. And so again, at the end of this month, we will launch what's known as the Philadelphia Citywide Cleanup Campaign. Now, Philly International, again, is commemorating its 50th year anniversary, and a few years after it started, something was launched in Philly called Let's Clean Up the Ghetto. There was an album that was put out that featured Lou Rawls and Dee Dee Sharp and others, and it was a major, major kind of hit for Philly and really kind of lifted and just, you know, propelled a lot of good energy in the city. Well, again, a lot has changed, so we're going to revitalize some of the real spirit of Black Philly come this month for Black Music Month. And so at the end of the month, June the 26th, I believe, we'll be launching the Citywide Clean Up the Ghetto campaign. For most cities where black folks reside due to COVID, so they say, a lot more trash, debris, light, etc., is more visible. And so here in Philly, I mean, it's really, like, horrible. The streets are often filled with an abundant amount of trash, and more so than, you know, in past years. And again, some say because of the COVID, it slowed up trash pickups and things of that nature. Well, at any rate, we are really focusing now on, again, cleaning up, you know, our community. We're looking at rebuilding our communities. And so with that said, we're going to do a citywide campaign where we connect with the block captains and other groups and organizations that are in our communities that really are about revitalizing our communities. Gentrification has played a major role in most Black communities, and we need to start taking back the land and taking back our communities. And so this Clean Up the Ghetto campaign will enable us to begin to do that as well. All right. All right, family. So what we're going to do is get ready to talk a bit about Juneteenth. Again, I remember when Brother Ron Brown here in Philly started the Juneteenth Coalition activities. And it was only a few folk 1 year, and then the next year it grew, and then the next year it grew some more. Well, now it's a major thing. In fact, I think a year or so ago they kind of declared Juneteenth as a holiday. Now, that might have changed, but at some point it was literally observed as a holiday. At any rate, all over the country now, Juneteenth is definitely being observed nationwide, and I mean abundantly. And again, I remember when it was not, you know, it was just not something that, you know, a lot of folks were really, you know, dealing with, looking at, observing, or whatever. Well, again, things have certainly changed. So we think Philadelphia was probably one of the key cities that, you know, begin to commemorate, celebrate Juneteenth. And again, it has grown expeditiously. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to get ready to talk to Brother Ron Brown, who is really the person that I know. I mean, you know, Philly is an interesting place. You can start something here, and once people see that it's growing, guess what? They try to steal it from you, or not steal it from you, at least try to create some other representation of it. And it's like the way they do it, right? The way they do it is just so shiesty. It's not like they're really trying to connect with the entity that started it, or the one that's really, you know, instrumental or key in developing it. They try to usurp or try to create, you know, some illusion of something else. Well, I'm not going to say that's what happened here in Philly, but maybe I am going to say that. But at any rate, it has grown. It's a wonderful thing. And so we're going to get ready to talk to Brother Ron Brown, who, again, as far as I know, was certainly the person that I learned Juneteenth about from. But again, it is now, you know, blown up, and a lot of the folks are doing it. And it's a coalition. So, and that's a wonderful thing when you have groups and organizations coming together to commemorate. But like I said, Philly Flavor is as such where they have this other underlining kind of thing. And yes, I'm going to say it because I can, and most won't because they're afraid, or, you know, they're too deep in somebody's pockets or whatever, but I'm none of that. So I'll say it. At any rate, Juneteenth, again, is coming up next week, and I want Brother Ron to share some history, because there's really some really, I think, positive history about Juneteenth. At any rate, we're going to go to our live line, and joining us now is Brother Ron Brown, who is, of course, the founder of the Philadelphia and now Pennsylvania Coalition, Juneteenth Coalition. Hey, greetings, Brother Ron.
Yes, greeting, my sister.
How are you this evening?
I tell you, you know, when I think about the bullets that my ancestors went under, and many they knew that they was going to, you know, possibly die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so many did die. Many suffered, you know, many had many wounds.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's when you're a freedom fighter, man, you have to put your life and on the line. And so, you know, when I think about them, I am, you know, maybe to speak to my sister, that's a blessing. And I'm always thankful for my blessings. And but you know, I'm here surviving, talking to the Queen, and I get the opportunity to share the correct history and the correct facts as is this in reference to even Juneteenth. So as you said, you know, I am the founder. And
All right. So with that said, Brother Ron, and thank you again for joining us, let's go to some history. I think it's so important. Again, you know, we need to know, you know, the facts. We need to know particularly about the history of our people, and I dare say, during a time period when you know, the fight for freedom was of a certain type. I mean, it's a continual thing, needless to say, but there are certain time periods that have to really be paid closer attention to or close attention to. So share with us some of the history of Juneteenth.
The history as reference to foundation of the organization,
mm-hmm.
corporation, as well as the history. I mean, I would share both, as well as the history of our ancestors, as well as the history of the present history. I had a vision, and fortunately, you know, I think it happened to be in the Germantown, and I didn't know that, you know, the history is just the spirit came to me and said, hey, this is the area in which you are going to do our Freedom Day. And and so I, you know, this was in 1993, before the internet. I said, okay, you know, I went to talk to every historian, every, you know, Dr. Robbs. I talked to every historian, every educator, every, you know, minister, you know, and I talked to everyone, and no one seemed to have known what that day was. So I went to every library, except one, but I went into every library. At the time, I lived up in the Mount Airy section, and I did about four months, 5 months of research. And then after I did all that research, I said, you know, let me start Freedom Day. Because when you look at the history of July 4th, you know, I knew that that was not our day. It's nothing that I saw in anything that said that that was our day. And then when I did the research, and I truly understood what Fred Douglas said, what the July 4th has to do with the African, you know. And I had nothing, you know, to do. But going back to the history, so I went to start that day. So I went to my then fiance, and I said, hey, look, I'm getting ready to start this Freedom Day. And she said, for African Americans. And she said, there is one already. And I'm like, oh, look, I talk to everybody. How do you know this stuff, you know? And she said, she had went to Florida State, and in Florida they had celebrated it, you know, there. So once I got the name, Juneteenth, as she shared it, I then went to the last library I didn't go to, and that was the main library. And it had a, I'm not going to be able to do it. So I went to the desk and had someone help me find, you know. And he took me right to a book by Charles Taylor, and it had about 5 pages dedicated to Juneteenth, but it had he was talking about all the holidays. And once I got that name and got that, I said, okay, there it is. And so I said, okay, how should I go about this, you know? And they, when I, at the time, Brother Tom told me, he was talking about organizations that a people need to, when we go out and, you know, for battle, for war, you know, we need to have organizations. So he was talking about organizations, forming organizations, people connected with organizations going out to deal with this, the ways in the world. And so I said, okay. And the research also showed me that, took me to the first African society, you know, the first form society, organization, African-American, coming out of a racist experience in the St. George Church, where Absalom Jones and Richard Allen and 15 other Africans thought that, and they shared to them that, hey, you are part of this, your faith, Methodist faith. You know, we are with you, brother. And he was sharing, you know, the lie. You hear a lot of the lie now by this guy Trump, but he was sharing the lie. And at the time, those Africans was with the Quakers because of the history of the Quakers, you know, the founding of the of those who came while the Indian was there, you know, and got the land from the king. He came, you know, but it also, you know, they was giving them the lie, and when they went down to kneel, you know, like everybody else, and they gave them titles of reverends. Well, that's where you had Reverend Richard Allen, Reverend Absalom Jones, and so when they went to kneel down and pray, just like everybody else, they said, no, no, you can't pray here. You got to pray up there, the balcony. And so those 15 Africans went out that door, and they formed the Free African Society. So when you look at those social organizations, health organizations, political organizations, churches, it came from that society as they formed it. They said, we're going to form a society, an empowerment of a people. We're going to go into our community to truly free our people. And so there you had the first church came out of, also out of that. You had all those members went out into their community and formed their own church. The two lead reverends, Reverend Allen formed the Mother Bethel AME Church. Brother Absalom Jones formed St. Thomas Episcopal Parish Church, Evangelist Church. And so the other 15, you know, well, eight of the 15, they formed Mother Zohar. And so each one formed their own church, you know. Each one formed their own society in all the fields of human endeavor. And so that's, you have the foundation. So that is the vision. That is what I need to go into the community and to get organizations, as Brother Tony said, as the history says. And so that what I went to do, and as I went to do it, my fiance at the time, she made transition. And you know, that was a, you know, a blow. And so I went to heal, you know, deal with those wounds as she left by, you know, I didn't. And so what, fortunately I was blessed by the experience of Brother Farrakhan. And Brother Farrakhan was calling millions and millions of men They call it a lean man walk. And I'm talking to the founder of the lean woman walk. That's not, it's coincidental. And so he was calling men, real men, to go into the communities, walk to communities like the freedom fighters of yesterday. And so I got on that bus because I wanted to be one of the freedom fighters like my ancestors. And I got on the bus and many, many men got on the bus and I saw the women like up yesterday when those Africans went into battle. Those sisters came and they brought food and they said, "Brother, you're right. Hey, brother, you need this." You know, they was preparing the men for the mission. The mission that they were, and I said, "This is it's history. This is." It was right before my eyes as I was on that bus, and then the bus went in, and when we, you didn't know what was going to happen. And when you, and when we got there, and I got off that bus, and I looked there, and I saw all these buses lined up, and then my bus, and I saw all these men getting off this bus. And I said, "Oh man, this is," and they all start getting in the line, and they all start walking and marching in Washington D.C. And they all start saying these songs. They all start saying these words, and I just fell right in line because it felt good. Oh man, it felt so good. And as we all marched there to the grounds, and you heard the many speeches, and you were so interested, I ended up running to my best friend. I'd tell you, who would think your best friend, you know, and we happened to experience that together. And so experiencing that, and the brother said, and all the speeches and of them, all the words that came out, the leaders of that day, mouth, and they said to go back into your community and develop and start the mission and bring the forms with organizations and people and be, start the foundation. And so I knew what my mission was. I was supposed to restart, refinish the mission. And so I went back and I was very fortunate because there was a guy who I had mentioned it to, what I was about to do. And his name was Gary Smalls. And he said to me, he said, "Ron, I want to help you, man. I want to be there with you." And I, you know, I know all the people. I know everybody. You know, he said, "I know those people." You know, he thought he knew those people. You know, just like, well, we think we know those people. And so he thought he knew these people. He's telling me, "I got them." I'm like, "I got the army. I got the, you know, I got it." And I said, "Well," he said, "what's your ideas?" And so I gave my papers and he looked at my papers and my ideas, and he took those papers and he started writing. And you know, I'm like, "Why?" He said, "Well, let me. I'm working on something." And so, what he was taking those ideas and bringing it down to, you know, a more of a minimum. And so he, I think I gave him about 35 papers, and he took it down to, I think he took it down to like 25. And then he took me to a guy named Reuben Benson. I didn't know then. Reuben Benson was the graphic designer for Kenny Gamble. Reuben Benson was a Kappa Pledge of Eternity. He happened to be a Kappa and Pledge of Eternity. And so he took those 25 pages and he took it down to 7. So he gave me the manifesto that I was to take into the communities and begin to sign those people up to do the first Juneteenth celebration in the state of Pennsylvania. And so okay. I went and I got 150 people to sign up. And then that's where the foundation started.
Okay, so because we only have about five more minutes, Brother Ron. So what year was that?
That was in 1990. That was in 1990. When the Million Man March was in 1995. So I founded the organization in 1995. I did the first festival with my sister. My sister was there in 1997. You know. And so, I went and moved in from, that was in Germantown. I moved from there to Philadelphia, and I did the event like my sister and I. You did the first African American event on the Parkway. I did the second one, and so that was in 2000, and I did it from 16th Street all the way to the Art Museum. And we did health and all that. So that was in 2000. And at that time, I expanded because, as I said, I was the first. And so I expanded. The vision was to expand in all the communities, all the cities, all the counties throughout the state. So I expanded in a larger way in Spanish City in 2000 and then expanded a larger way in 2001. So that's when I went into all the communities. And so that's why Juneteenth is a state legal holiday. Because I didn't do like a doom day, you know. I expanded to all the communities throughout the state of Pennsylvania. So if you look at my calendar I just put out, you will see also all the counties in the state of Pennsylvania during the Juneteenth celebration. So I was able to get those people to go to their, you know, get their Republican, because the thing at the time there was a difference in 25 in the House of Republicans versus Democrats, and 80 in the in the Senate, and 80 in the House. So no African American bill has ever went through there. And so we was able to get John Myers to introduce it in 2001, and Senator Shirley Kitchen in 2003. And so each year they voted unanimously to make it a state recognized holiday. And so we was able to get it to be a state legal holiday. I was able to get a state legal holiday, introduce it in the year of my ancestors' 400th anniversary of 1619. I did that in 2019 by plan, and then we was able to get it a state legal holiday. In the state of Pennsylvania, I was able to get a state legal holiday with the, you know, organizations and all the family members I talked about. That was a part of the mission that in 2019, and then in 2020, Governor Wilk made it an official holiday where the employees could get paid the day off, and so that was in. In 2020, I was able to, because I'm the Northeast Regional Director, get it. You know, the schools of Dr. Height, he made it official holiday. Over 250 corporations I was able to get at the time made it a holiday within their corporations, and people get paid off. And I was able to get it in New York with my good brother Como there. And then we went to New Jersey and got it there. And then I went to Massachusetts and got it up in there as official legal holidays. And so now I'm sitting at the table, writing with those legislators to make it a national holiday. So this next week, we have over 60 co-sponsors at this time. 20 Republicans as a co-signers, and the rest of them is mostly Democrats, and they're going to, it's destined to be. But what I did, I said, okay, you just can't go into a history like that. You can't go and give the employees that day off, because if they would go into history, the employees would get that day off. And people like me would say, hey, man, that's nice that you gave the employees that day off, but it is a legal holiday. So what I did, I put two acts have two acts in the Senate. And one of those acts is the Commission Act. It was also first introduced by Senator Harris, who was happened to be the vice president now. And she, and that was the a commission where it would be four people from the House, I mean from the presidency, four from the House and four from the Senate, and 14 from the community. So you get a chance to decide who those 14 would be nationally from the community that would form to bring, you know, we would get dollars and cents to for education and programming throughout the nation. So I put an act in for that to occur. And the second act was the Observance Act, is what would be those ways or that people would celebrate their ancestors' holiday. And so history, I'm fortunate through all that research I said I've been doing since 93, I'm fortunate that I have the only basic documents, real black and white documents, that actually prove our history. And so, you know, I'm very fortunate that I, you know, have that. And so when you hear all these people who out there say what they say, they do not Juneteenth history. Most of those are the opportunists, you know. And so looking for opportunity, you know, just like back then when those freedom fighters was in the community on the battlefield, and there was I'm not going out there, but they looking for the opportunity with the master, you know, and whoever, you know, and most of them, you know, with the master. So, you know, that was done. And so now we are, you know, we're waiting. It's supposed to be going into the Judiciary Committee. And so they would debate on that, you know, you see how that's like done on TV, because most of everything is done through that committee. And so right now, and so that two acts will be attached to the bill, S-475, you know, and which is in the Senate, and H.R. 1320 is in the House. And they would be attached, but look. Everybody saw the January the 6th, and it showed you what time it is. And I heard you share about these opportunists in our communities, leeching off our people, you know, pimping off our people. You know, this is the same thing that's going on today. And as I find myself, and we find ourselves experiencing it, because you know, for me, I clearly understand through that history that there's five type of applicants, and one is the freedom fighter, the other one is the freedom seeker, the other is the opportunist, the other was the captain, the slaves. And so each one has their roles, you know. And so, you know, the opportunists, you know, they have no regard for principles, you know. You see, those were the ones who was whipping the applicants. They would take the whip. The master said, "I whip that applicant." You know, they would whip the applicant because they saw the opportunity, and they would get the crumbs off his plate, you know. And so here it is today. But you know, these Europeans, you know, now, you know, they couldn't beat us, so now they got to pay you off with the money and whatever they have. You know, I remember one time they would pay our people off with the drugs and the liquor. You know, they would flood our community with that. And so now they you know, everybody, you see them, they going down. They out there, you know, these opportunists. They go out there, whether they're a politician, whoever, especially the politicians. You know, these people are being paid and brought. Like for example. You know, now after 24 years of being, you know, in there, and they said, "Oh man, they've been watching and looking and see how," and they wait till you go. See, they always wait till you go to war, and then we wait to see how many survive and how you survive and how you come back. You know, and so when you come back, then what they do, they said, "Oh, he got that idea," you know, and so it looks like it's going through. It looks like I can make some money. Oh, he said, "Hey, look, go over here and get this. You can get the money here. Get this." And so he got a lot of money. And so what they do, they go and they snap. Well, you saw that happen in 2016, where they came out and
and try to, you know, make their moves, you know, those opportunities, you know. And so, but see, they didn't understand that we were so much larger than that, you know. As I said, you know, the community, we were so much organized and larger than that. That's why we was able to get it to be a state legal holiday. That's why we was able to get it to be, to get it to be a national holiday with those freedom fighters from Philadelphia. Like those freedom fighters back in the real history, if you know the real history is those African freedom fighters who came from the community of the Seventh Ward. They're in, they're down in Old City at that time. And so they had Tavis Scotto, they had Jacob White, they had Frederick Douglass, they had Francis Harper, they had them saying, hey, Africans, come up and go into those wars, and get in that war, and because the Confederates was right there in Harrisburg, they were so close, and it says you got to now get up and go into those wars as freedom fighters, as warriors, you know, as you are. And so those Africans, those freedom fighters, they signed up and went into the on August the 3rd, 1863, they went into, and they understood that what the real history was, the history of Jubilee, which was on the Liberty Bell, Leviticus chapter 25, verse 10, you know, it says, what, reunite your family, return, stop the oppression of one to the other, and return them to the tribe. And so they joined the first federal camp for, you know, USCTs in the Civil War. And that was that Camp William Penn over there in Cheltenham Township. If you go there now, you see the Cheltenham Mall. So they signed up, 11,000 Africans signed up at that camp. And it was six of the of the 11, they went to, it was interesting, Fort Monroe. And so they came into Fort Monroe, which we know was what? The 400, you know, 1619 with ancestors. So they went into Virginia because Virginia was the capital of the Federal Army, you know. And so, you know, you had Richmond was that in that capital in Virginia. And so they went into Fort Monroe, and then they ended up going up into Petersburg where they did battle with the Confederates, and they was able to defeat the Confederate there in Petersburg and break the lines. And so they was able to, as a result of them doing that, they was able to stop the trains, you know, take control of the trains and the supplies, you know. And so, you know, so the Confederate couldn't get that. And then they went into Newmarket Heights and they beat them there. And so the Confederate then, they said, okay, we gotta, you know, back out of this. And so they left there. They left past their capital of Richmond, and they went to Appomattox, Virginia. And so those Africans, six of those Africans, they turned them into a special troop called the 25th Corps. And that troop right there, they did also had the 31st and the 31st was the troop out of New York, and they had the 29th, and that was a troop out of Illinois, and they had the 22nd, which was a part of that troop originally, and which was that was a troop mostly of out of Jersey, and so they made those troops infantries of a special infantry called the 25th Corps, and it was those Africans then did battle with General Lee and defeated the General Lee in the at Appomattox. And so when they defeated General Lee, the war was, you know, was basically almost over because he had surrendered, and all across, you know, the South, you know, they start putting their arms down, but some of the others didn't because they was the one that had the slaves, and so, you know, they didn't want to, no, we ain't giving up this these slaves. And so the it took the 25th Corps to do that, and so gradually they begin to do it. But then, you know, the last of the Africans that needed to be given the freedom, or the last state that needed to be to enforce Lincoln's Emancipation, was in Galveston, Texas. And so those 25th Corps of Africans, under the leadership of a guy named Godfrey Winslow, they went into, they also had, people didn't know, they also had a Navy. And so they was also had, they was in charge of the Navy. They was attacking them from by sea, as well as they was attacking them by land. And so after they defeated them, then they was mustered to Texas. And so So they did it for several reasons. One, because of the French had attacked Napoleon had just took over Mexico, and so they was coming in to about to come into the United States through Texas, and so that 25th Corps had to go. Imagine brothers, you know, all brothers, not one European, all brothers, and so they had to go and fight there. So some of the they had about say about 13 ships, and so all those ships had to go up there to do that. Now they had one ship with the headquarters with the where Godfrey Winslow, and they had the those Africans from the eighth, twenty-second, forty-first, forty-third, forty-fifth, and 127th here. At Camp William Penn, here where? In South Philly, you know? And so those Africans there went and that was the last one. Their role was to go from Virginia to Alabama where Gorton Granger, the guy who was the, you know, he had sent all his troops to Galveston, Texas on the 16th of June. And so those Africans went, and he was in Alabama, and so they took their steamer and ship there and picked him up, and then took him to the headquarters in New Orleans to get all his papers, and where he wrote his first general order. So he had five general orders that he was going to enforce in the in Galveston. So the first was written there at the headquarters, and then the other four was, you know, read there. But those Africans escorted him into Galveston, Texas, and they surrounded Granger as he read General Order Number 3. And so General Order Number 3 was the order that said to the Africans, basically, you are forevermore free. So, you know, but you have to go back into the fields, you know, to your masters, but you are forevermore free. And so they had, you know, looking at the black and white history, they had walked out of the, most of them walked out of the place, especially the day before that they knew that they was coming. So when you look at the black and white, it says they left their plantations, they left the day before because they knew they were going to be there the next day. So they went to a place, the Osterman building, where the headquarters was at, where he, Granger was going to read, you know, his orders. So they surrounded by those Africans from, as I said, where? Philadelphia, who was there to protect Granger as he read General Order Number 3. And after he read it, said, you know, it broke into a spontaneous celebration in the streets of Galveston, Texas. And this is what we call it today. You know, what would we call it today? And they said we'll call it Juneteenth.
All right. Well, my brother, unfortunately, we are running out of time, and I'm hoping maybe we can continue. I know next week is the Juneteenth actual day, but I wanted our people to hear some of the actual history, because a lot of times they hear Juneteenth, but don't know or hear the actual history. So hopefully we can get you back for part two to continue to really, you know, bring things forward. But my next guest is about ready to come on. But what I'd like to do is to go to our lines real quick, see if there's any questions or comments for now. And if you can come back next week to finish up, we would love to have you back.
There's no way I can do that, sister, to be honest with you.
Okay.
So crazy.
No problem.
I can't, but I did it for my community, my sister. You know, I don't think I would do it for too many other people, but I am so
happy. All right. Well, let me do this real quick, because I think we have a couple, may have at least one or two callers, and I'll get at least one to see if there's a question or comment real quick. And then we're going to bring Brother Charles Hicks in, who's going to talk to us about Black Fathers Matter. So we're going to go to caller at 6403. Thank you for holding on, and your line is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day. 6403. Okay. All right, going. Okay, and let me just check with 7430. 7430, your mic is open. Did you have a question or a comment? Okay, for some reason we're not hearing folk. I don't know what's going on with that. So, all right, Brother Ron, well, unfortunately, we are not able to get the callers to respond. So let's try one more. Caller at 9498, your mic is now open. Did you have a question or a comment?
Sister Filet, can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
Oh, okay, good. Hello, family. How you doing?
Hey, Brother Ray.
This brother's been fighting this thing, and that history is real good. I was just looking at you would think with the Tulsa, with Biden, with the Tulsa, Oklahoma, along with Juneteenth, along with reparations and the struggle, and the Asians get their stuff passed immediately.
How about that?
And you know what really makes it sickening is the people in Texas. I just happened to be looking at it. They didn't let them know until 2.5 years later. So that's something else. And the history is sitting right in your face, and we still can't get none of it passed. So I guess the fight. And the other question is, with us dying in the streets through police brutality and, you know. And I was just reading how the two, matter of fact, young girls that got the valedictorian, and they did a recount and put two little white girls next to them because they got jealous. I guess the struggle goes on. And just thanks
Absolutely.
For putting it down.
Absolutely.
Thanks
yeah.
for
All
putting
right,
it down
right,
because
yeah.
it seemed
yeah.
like they
yeah.
turning the clock back
yeah.
on every occasion. The two black students won honor school, then they demanded a recount and created two other positions so two white students could join them. So
yeah, let me ask
the struggle
you,
goes
yeah.
on.
Let me answer your question. You know, as you would say, I heard your question, and I started from the. I would like to start from the beginning. Now, when you look at history, you know the Juneteenth. you know, that was for the 10 states that was for the given their
mm-hmm.
freedom. Now you had the 13th Amendment, and that amendment was supposed to give all the enslaved and the other states, you know, that was not part of that 10. And so
mm-hmm.
people don't know that the 13th Amendment had a clause in there that talked about, you know, that you were free all of those Africans except those who was in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that right there came mass incarceration. Because at that time, you know, hey, oh, you free? No, we put you in prison. That's not, you know, and then they, you know, let's say, you know, they snatch you up and put you in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And then they put you back in the fields.
Mm-hmm.
And so that practice exists even today. Even today it exists. You know, mass incarceration, like where the officer gets that time off with extra pay, you know,
mm-hmm.
to take an African or a brown person off the streets and put them in prison, you know. That, you know, so that those practices, you know, exist today, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's so much of that history as I shared. it is just today, you know. I mean, everything people don't know, you know, a lot has to do. We have to also understand. You see, people don't know. By far, there's more Europeans than black and brown people. And so when you're able to get a Trump saying what he said, he did it saying it because there are more Europeans. See, they give you the lie to say that they were, no. Hey, they stopped us at the border. At least he was saying it. You know, he said it. Mm-hmm. He said, no, shithole country. My people, he said it. He said that because he knew the reality of who he was speaking to. And so you saw January 6th, you know, you saw him down there. You saw those people. If you look at Aubrey, Brother Aubrey, you know, you saw them, you know, going to see. If you look at Brother Troy, you saw them. I mean, that each thing has a reason for the season. Mm-hmm. And so they do what they do. But, you know, it's that's why they can say that after you think you got this? Oh, no. Voter suppression. This is in a system historically. If we read the history, this is the system. But you have to understand it. And what they did to enslave the African, you take away information. Mm-hmm. You take away his culture. You take away his history. You take that away from the – and then you have the slaves. You know, and then you have the opportunity, you know, and so everything is by design, you know. So when you look and see and spend, but you go, you keep thinking, oh, after Obama, then a Trump. It's not by design,
and then we keep drinking
the Kool-Aid, like he told the reporter, you've been drinking the Kool-Aid.
All right, my brothers, well, listen. We're going to have to continue this dialogue at another time.
See you next
I have
week.
Another guest coming up. And Brother Ron, when you are available, let me know, because as you can tell, this is a conversation that we need to continue.
Continue.
So absolutely. But I do have another
guest
that's ready to come on. So Brother Ron Brown, how can people connect with you? You have a website or a Facebook?
Yeah. We have two websites. We have one, PAJuneteenth.org, and then the other one is, I tell you, I came out of mind. Yeah, I got my spirit in that. I can't think of what that's one of them. And so they can go reach that to me. My email is Juneteenth22@gmail.com. You know, Juneteenth22@gmail.com, the number 22. So they can always email
me. Right. Great. All right, my brother, again, thank you so much
all
for
right,
taking the time to join us.
Yeah.
And we certainly look forward to having you back with us soon.
All right, my sister.
All right, thank you.
All right. Thanks, Brother Ray Ray. All right, family, we are moving forward. Again, we indicated that, of course, Juneteenth is going to be commemorated on Saturday in particular. And so, of course, in different parts of the country, there's a whole bunch of Juneteenth programs going on that even leads up to Saturday. But also, Sunday is Father's Day. So there's all kind of two things going on for that weekend. But the thing that I like about what we're getting ready to talk about now is this brother made it very specific, and I think that's so important for black folks to really, you know, if we're going to buy into these holidays that other people made up, because, you know, there's Mother's Day, and, you know, that wasn't started by nobody black, obviously, and I'm sure Father's Day wasn't either. However, to transform or to at least put another spin on it, as Aishaka Musa Barashanko kind of told us when he, you know, showed us about European holidays, when I saw this posting about celebrating black men, black fathers, I was like, well, you know, we got to get him on, because we know that folks, you know, kind of don't want to break away from the European stuff. And, you know, okay, so let's try to find some other alternatives until we're able to establish our own. So when we saw this with this brother, we said, hey, we're going to get him on. And he was kind enough to say, yeah, I'll come. And so we're going to bring him. Before we do, want you to know that the chat room is open. So if you have some comments or thoughts you want to put in the chat room, you can certainly do so. And so without further ado, hold on a minute. I got to find where he is in the queue here. We're talking about, okay, there we go. We're talking about Brother Charles Hicks. And again, he was saying Black Fathers Matter. I like that. So without further ado, family, I want you to meet Brother Charles Hicks. And he is now open. Hey, Brother Charles, how are you this evening?
I am good. I am blessed, my sister.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, thank you again. Yeah, we hear you loud and clear. Thank you again for joining us. So tell us about what's getting ready to happen. Great.
Well,
tell us what's getting ready to happen next Sunday.
Well, we're going to be doing a motorcade called Black Fathers Matter. Last year when there were all the demonstrations going on in Black Fathers Plaza in D.C., and for many of us who are over 50, we couldn't get down there, but we knew that the next day was Father's Day, and I thought that from the beginning, since we've been brought here from slavery, from Africa, Black men have had a very difficult time. We've always got the short end of the stick. And so I just thought that it was important for us to celebrate Black men under the difficult circumstances that Black men, boys have had to live under from the time of slavery to the I started we all found some time to celebrate Black men and tell them they're important and that we love them and we respect their dignity and their pride, and that if you find Black men with a self-esteem and pride that I can't find in any other man, I mean, even if they are down and out, still proud to be Black men.
That's
so
right.
With that concept, we put together this project called Celebrating Black Men. And the purpose is to celebrate and acknowledge that Black fathers matter, that they're important to us in our lives, they're important to our family, they're important to our community, because if it had not been for Black fathers, there could be no Black families. And then we want to also remember under different circumstances that many unarmed Black men have been killed by police officers. And then thirdly, we want to remind all citizens that the majority of deaths and infection from COVID-19, the highest numbers being in D.C. or wherever you are, the infections and the highest numbers of deaths are in African-American community with Black men. And so we are trying to put together some serious stuff while yet still celebrating Black Fathers Matter and telling Black men that you mean something to us, and you carried the history of us on your back for a long time, and we appreciate that. You know, I sometimes look at, and I take nothing away from our mothers because they've been incredible, but for Black men, I can remember when I was growing up in Bogalusa, Louisiana, which is the home of the Deacons, where the first Black civil rights workers carried guns in the civil rights movement. I remember that during my time growing up, that sometimes my mother would be in line or something was happening, and my mother would, as the folks call, suck a white man out. But if a Black man had said half the things that my mother, Black woman, would say to white man, we'd be dead. And so we have been very careful and struggle to stay alive, to be able to do the things that we do. And so that's the concept behind Black about the motorcade.
All right. So, Mr. Hicks, tell what else is going to be happening. You said it's going to be a motorcade. Tell us about what's going to be happening on Sunday.
Well, we're going to start off at the African American Civil War Museum. And for those who don't know, the National African American Civil War Museum is a museum that has traced the role and the activities of African Americans in the Civil War. And we even have books that you can go in and study and see if you lived in Blassfield, Mississippi, and you were a Smith, you can go to Mississippi and go to Blassfield and see John Smith and trace him to see if he was a relative and know that he fought in the Civil War. So we start off at the Civil War. We go to war, the predominantly Black wars here in the city. and we'll have car people will decorate their cars. We will go to have a motorcade, and we'll be blowing our horns. We'll decorate our cars with balloons. We'll have posters that say Black Fathers Matter, Black Lives Matter, that we'll have on our cars, and we'll be giving them out. People in the motorcade will also have hats, caps, that will say Black Fathers Matter, Black Lives Matter, and on the back it says, get the shot. And so as we go through the quarters in the city, we're going to have African drummers on flatbeds that are going to drum to make people aware that we're celebrating Father's Day. And one of the things that's so exciting and enjoyable about doing this is when we did it last year, we did it in a two-week turnaround, the people who came out, you and was reaching for those signs throughout the community in the inner city, they were so proud and so happy to have those signs. And throughout the year, we have seen those signs in beauty parlors, stylist shops and barber shops and windows and liquor stores and people's yards everywhere. And those are the 5,000 signs that nobody threw away. We also have about 20 banners we're going to hang you out in the center. City that says Black Fathers Matter, Black Lives Matter. Happy Father's Day. And we want people to be aware. We're doing this and we're shouting it to the rooftop. And, of course, we invite anybody who believes in Black Lives Matter, then we invite you to be a part of Black Fathers Matter, because if Black Lives Matter, Black Fathers Matter. And so we invite anybody, be you white, be you black, be you Latino, be you Asian, be you gender-loving people, whoever wants to come and be a part of this, to say that Black Fathers Matter, we understand the sacrifices and we support you, they're welcome to join the motorcade.
All right. Mr. Hicks, do you mind sharing what your age is?
I am 76.
All right. All right, family. So, you know, again, we are always open to hear from our elders and certainly appreciate, you know, the work and the effort that they put forward. Mr. Hicks, where are you located? What city?
I live in Washington, D.C., and we have had just a good support of uprising of sponsors and supporters for this project. Like I said, last year we did it in about a two-week turnaround. This time we've had 6 weeks to work on it. And last year we had about 60 cars. We're expecting at least 175 to 200 cars to be in our motorcade. We've had some wonderful sponsors. We've had the guy who makes the sign, Gilbert Signs. We have Ben and Jerry's, who's going to give out ice cream as we're lining up, as people are decorating our cars. We've had WHUR. We've had WPFW. We've got the Washington Informer. And then we got, once we get to the site, we're going to have all kinds of giveaways. We have IHOP, who's going to be giving away gift certificates. We're going to have a very popular a restaurant called Bus Bars and Ports that's all over the city, but they have a shop in Ward 8, which is predominantly black part of Ward of the city, as is IHOP. And so we've had all these people who are willing to say, let us support you, let us do things. And then we're particularly proud this year that we got a lot of good endorsements. That's why we're still getting them. But we have Congresswoman Norton. We have our new chief of police, Robert County, who is so in tune with trying to make a change in this city and respecting black men and the black community. And he's holding all kinds of meetings and listening and talking about things where you can improve. Then we got a couple of council members. We got Trayon White, who is from Ward 8. We got a council member, McDuffie. We also have the founder of African American Civil War Museum, Dr. Frank Smith, is going to be in the motorcade. We have a civil rights icon, Dory Latin, and she comes out of Mississippi. And if you know anything about the civil rights movement, the Latin sisters were very, very famous because of their work in Mississippi along with Fannie Lou Hamer. Yes. But and one of the interesting things about Dory Lydner is that Dory was the last person to be seen with Medgar Evers before he was killed. She was about 17 and going out to dinner, and he dropped her off at home and said, "Medgar, I'll see you tomorrow." And when he drove home, opened his door to ambush him and killed him. So she was the last person to have conversation with him, but she's there. And then we have a very popular newscaster, Sam Ford, who everybody in the city and the African American community knows that he's solid. And he's on the motorcade. And then we're doing a big program on WPFW FM Monday. We're talking about what it's like to be a single father, what is it like to be a black father, and what you'd like to leave with your children. And some people talking about what they got out of that father, what it meant to be a father. And then we have a couple of people who's going to talk about people who stepped in to be fathers for them. And so we're excited about celebrating black fathers and just be fathers. And we're encouraging everybody to do this. And we like to think that this time next year that we'll have, just 10 or 15 other cities, 20 other cities doing celebrating black fathers for Father's Day. We're just creating a model that we think everybody can do. Just like you do stuff for black history all over the country, you can do Black Fathers Matter. All over the city, all over the country.
All right. I love it. Mr. Hicks, stay right there. I'm going to bring a couple of our family members in who's our New Day family. Father Ray Ray, I'm going to open up your mic. You got something you want to share with Mr. Hicks? Hold on 1 minute.
Hello,
okay.
Sister Filet.
There you
can hear me?
Brother Ray Ray. Yeah, we got you.
Oh, I tell you, boy, this gentleman, Mr. Hicks, is really... really on the move, and when he mentioned, thank you, Mr. Hicks. When you mentioned the Civil War Museum, they had a brother there named Harry Jones. He transpired.
Oh yes, that was my good friend.
Oh man, this. Let me tell you, family.
Storyteller.
If you ever heard anybody that knew about this history, I wish he was here today. He left us too soon.
And he worked at the Civil War Museum.
Yeah.
And one of the good things about Harry was that many years ago, before the Civil War Museum was started, I did a program doing Black History called Celebrating Black History, and I had a big talent show entertainment. And every year, I brought on Harry Jones, and he told these stories and mesmerized the entire audience. I mean, he could just make stories come alive.
He was unbelievable.
That's my brother.
We
miss him greatly.
And another question, but I really, in D.C., they pump up the African American Museum where everybody goes, but you get the real history a couple of blocks down at the Civil War Museum and with Anthony Browder's Egypt on the Potomac tours down there.
Oh, you're right on it, brother. You're right on it.
Excellent.
And you know, I take this position that if it had not been for the Civil War and the African American Museum, there could not be the African American Museum of History and Culture. It just really couldn't exist, because you have to know our history and what happened coming over here from slavery and how black men decided to fight for their freedom. So all this leads up to the African American Civil War Museum. But you're right, we would not have a real history and a real sense of ourselves and what we've done if it had not been for the African-American Civil War Museum. So that preceded. And if you couldn't even, like I said, you just couldn't have the African-American Civil War Museum of History and Culture with any significance if you didn't have the African-American Civil War Museum. You're absolutely right.
Everything you said is good, but it's one small thing, and I don't want to throw shade on the... There's one small thing I kind of disagree with. It's for Jab. get that shot. I really think that is, you know, I don't agree with that one. I know it's personal,
well,
but it's just too much. You need some more information,
you know,
and historical facts with these heart attacks and all this. So I wish that would have been, that wouldn't have been so much of an emphasis. Because it seemed like you're going to be moving, asking people to get the shot. So, and it's just too much stuff going, because you might catch a heart attack afterwards.
I understand your position, and one of the things that I like about this is that people have choices, and that if people don't want to do it, they don't have to. And those of us, you know, when I see all people throughout this country making the decision to do it, and now everybody in the country is doing it and going to do it. And so the wonderful thing about this is that there's a choice.
Right.
And that one of the things I think is different about this and the Tuskegee experiment was that they refused to give penicillin to black men when they could have saved their lives. And so when I look at the history of the Tuskegee experiment, and we know now that from the beginning of this whole virus, the vaccination, there have been all kinds of credible black doctors and teachers and Howard University and just medical school and the National Black Medical Association. They've been all involved in this from the beginning to the end. But I think that, you know, the wonderful thing is that people have a choice. And one of the things that's important to us is that for people who don't have access. There are people who want to get it, but they don't have access because they didn't have computers. Black people couldn't get on the line because they didn't have computers or didn't know how to use it. Black people couldn't get to a site because the buses weren't running. You know, there are all these obstacles. There are black people who wanted to get it, couldn't get it. But,
well,
you know, I say black people have choice.
I understand that.
And what I understand is that they make their decision. For those who don't want to get it, they don't have to. But those who want to get it, we need to make it accessible. That's the way we look at it. But I understand that there are those who don't agree with it, and that's okay, because you have a choice.
Yeah, well, like I said, you know, everything else that y'all were doing for that on the time that they dragging us through the mud with black fathers, we just catching hell. And me personally, to the fam, you know, my wife and them wants to take me out, but if I had it my way, listen, any day is a Father's Day with what's happening to us in this goddamn country. We can't get a quarter from reparations. The gentleman just came on about Juneteenth.
Right.
By Tulsa and dying in the streets, and they still, and the Asians get their shit in 2 seconds, and Sheila Jackson Lee is still with these bills sitting up there collecting dust. But I thank you for what you're doing, and it seems like it's going to be a pretty big event. But thank you for mentioning the Civil War, because Harry Jones was a bad motor scooter.
Yes, he was. And let me just mention also that we have a whole bunch of returning brothers who've been incarcerated who are going to be a part of this Black Fathers Matter. We have a couple of brothers who are going to talk about, as an incarcerated brother and coming back, and how they have been able to get back into their children's lives and their family lives. And so there are incarcerated citizens who are going to be a part of Black Fathers Matter.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds like it's going to be a pretty hit thing. And you know, so that's good.
All right, Mr. Hicks. Well,
thank you so very much.
I think it's always important that, you know, we hear from our seniors, our elders, and particularly when they're trying to do some stuff that they really need to get done. So we certainly appreciate you, Mr. Hicks. And again,
doing a lot of stuff.
Yeah. How can people connect with you? How can they get more information?
Well, there are a couple of things. One, if people want to call, they can call me at 202 421-8608. And I always give the phone number out first because a lot of people are not familiar with, for those who are over 50, sometimes we can't use some other social media. But we're on social media, and we are on our Facebook. And it's like us on Facebook at dc.fathersmatterproject. Why are you laughing? Because I said that.
Because I'm really proud of you, Mr. Hicks. And that's why I wanted, you know, again, you know, I always hear people, I can't do that. And y'all,
and
Mr. Hicks is 76.
He's running strong at his age, Mr. Filet.
I love it. Mr. Hicks, you on Facebook? You on Instagram?
We got like us on Facebook, DC Black Fathers Matter Project. We're on Instagram. Follow us at DC Black Fathers Matter Project. We got hashtag DC Father Matter. DC Black Fathers Matter. We got hashtag DC Black Fathers Matter and hashtag DC Black Fathers Matter Project. And of course, we got an email, blackfathersmatter2020@gmail.com. And like if everything else fails, you can call me at 202-421-8608.
Everybody else playing Mr. Tricks for Mr. Hicks and Johnson.
We need not to make it, not allow people to be able to connect with this. And so we want all avenues, and we've had a great turnout of support from the churches. Our churches have put it in their bulletins, and we're happy about that. And so, like I say, next year our plan is to not only to do it in D.C., but to start doing this in different cities. But just because the concept is Black Fathers Matter wherever you are. And even for
people who,
an uncle or brother who stood in and was a father, a black father, even sometimes if a mother played two roles as a mother and a father, we want to celebrate that. Those are difficult jobs. And it's been a difficult job being a black man and a black father in this country.
Still love
black fathers. So, their contributions have been immeasurable.
All right. Well, Mr. Hicks, we appreciate you. We thank you. That's right. Now, listen, for those folks that be talking about, I can't do it, y'all need to be ashamed of yourself.
That's right. He ain't stopped yet. He has some more stuff for us, Sister Filet.
But all they have to do is... They all got a cell phone. They either got a landline or a cell phone. And all they have to do is call me at 202-421-8608, and we'll send them information. Just like we sent that flyer to you, we can send it to anybody.
That's right. All right. And that's like, look, I'm so glad I saw that flyer. I'm not even sure how I got it, but I got it. And so, you know, when we get information, we try to pass it on. So, Mr. Hicks, thank you so much. Let's stay in touch, okay? I'll be coming to D.C. soon.
You know, good. Look, please look me up. You know, I say this. I say, you know, as Malcolm X said, knowledge is power. And I always say, none is detrimental. If you don't have knowledge, it's detrimental. But with knowledge is power. You can make decisions. You can understand. You can decide. But if you don't have knowledge, it's detrimental to you.
That's right. No doubt about it. Well, Mr. Hicks, again, I thank you much. Wait a minute. I got one caller that's still on. Let me see if I can go back to caller at 6403. Let's see if 6403 has some comments for you, Mr. Hicks. I'm going to open up that. My truck opened up earlier. 6403, your mic is open. Welcome to the segment of New Day.
Yes. How are you, Sister Empress?
Oh, it's Brother Mike. Yeah, how are you, Brother Mike?
Good. Good to hear from everybody, and I'm just sitting back enjoying all of your guests, and I'm listening to Brother Ray, and it's all good. You know, I'm glad he brought up Brother Harry Jones, because that's one of the greatest storytellers of all time.
Wow.
Incredible wealth of information, so much care and concern about our people, and he brought up little-known facts on the black men who put their lives on the line and risked it all to free all of our people. You know, there would be there would be no free Africans in America had it not been for the efforts of those 200,000 plus black men who put their lives on the line and fought to make America one nation. That was something that even the white man and all his devilishness, even he could not turn around and enslave us again after that. He had to free all of us because of the efforts of those black men who beat the hell out of the Confederacy and made the country one country. And a part of that, obviously, was Juneteenth. And the whole, you know, making America one nation. So it was incredible, the efforts and what it took, and all those who did the recruitment, you know, whether it was Martin Delaney, Fred Douglas, and so many others that encouraged black men to fight the good fight. And just, again, Harry Jones, to bring up that history and to literally talk himself into the job. He didn't have that job at the Civil War Museum. He actually was just so good not being not paid that they had to find a way to pay that brother to keep him there. And he was incredible. And thank God we had him at UAM. We brought him to the United African Museum in New York. And his equipment, it was just so good that his equipment wasn't working. He had a slide presentation, and it wasn't working. He said, no problem. And the storytelling he did, it was better than whatever his slide presentation would be, because he was incredible. So, you know, I would take the time on Juneteenth just to say that our brother Harry Jones was incredible. The research that he did, you know, we always remember the Dr. Clarks and Benz and John Jacksons and so many others and the Chancellor Williams, but we have unheralded brothers like Harry Jones who touched on areas that they never really mentioned. And he went in deep with it. So I'm glad that Brother Rick, you know, brought up Harry Jones. He deserves to be mentioned because you almost never hear anybody mention his name. But Dr. Harry Jones was incredible.
He was absolutely remarkable, brother. He is so missed. But one of the things that we were lucky enough to do a couple of times, I was able to get Harry Jones and has a brother called C.R. Gibbs. And they, during Black History Month, a couple other times, they gave talks together, and they are just absolutely phenomenal. And so if you're ever interested, call the museum or call me, and so we can give you information about C.R. Gibbs. He does an amazing job. And sometimes he and Harry came together, and you're talking about knowledge, powerful knowledge. They just supported each other, just lift up each other. When Gibbs say something, Harry would say this, and then Harry would say, "Oh, by the way, this," and they could just click.
Oh,
together.
Wow!
And so that is the C.R. Gibbs. You need to look him up. You need to know about it, because he and Harry Jones have been two best things I've seen in my life in terms of current brothers who search for the truth. Don't sugarcoat.
Wow.
Well, Mr. Hicks, we got to get him on as well.
Yes, if you call me, I can connect you. He's a good brother. He doesn't mind doing it.
Okay.
No, he's bad. I got him on.
And
I Googled him. He's a bad guy. He's bad. He's bad brother. I Googled him. They got a whole line of stuff with his name.
Yes. Yeah. And by the way, if you can't get it, you can always call me at MrBlackHistory@yahoo.com. That's my email.
I tell you, boy,
MrBlackHistory@yahoo.com. But yeah, Calgary is just amazing. And he's written about 8 books.
Wow.
Just wonderful, wonderful knowledge. And he runs, lectures at all the public libraries in the African-American community and in Maryland and Virginia. He gives free lectures.
Wow.
Wow, Brother Ray Ray, maybe you can get him to be on the NACI lecture.
Well, we'll try our best. Once we get back, they redoing the place. So,
okay.
I wish we had the enthusiasm of this gentleman because he he's still rolling strong.
But you know, one of my philosophies is that you don't need everybody doing everything. Everybody can't do everything, but everybody needs to try to find their niche. And if people find their niche, then we all come together and we make things happen.
That's right.
And that's so important. That, you know, everybody does not have to be, everybody does not have to be given orders, but everybody has to find some way to do something positive because they're black. And do something
right.
That will help all race. That you can't do everything, but you can find your niche. If it's no more than calling a senior citizen and say, "Miss Jones, I'm on my way to the store. Can I get you something?" You know, supporting black families. Life of black men mean a whole lot of different things, and it's a wide spectrum. So it ain't just marching; it's a whole and demonstrate, but it's a lot of other things. It's about caring.
That's right. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
You learn to love.
Yes. All right, Mr. Hicks. Well, we hear you loud and clear. You done inspired and motivated us.
Everybody else is Mr. Tricks, but Mr. Hicks ain't no joke.
All right, Mr. Hicks. Well, we just recruited you.
I'd love to come back and jump
in. Yeah, you're part of the New Day family now.
Yeah, I'd love to come back sometime and tell you about the Deacons. The Deacons were the first black group to carry guns in the Civil Rights Movement. And HBO did a movie called The Deacons for Defense.
For Defense,
and
yep.
With Ozzie Davis and it's wonderful because one of the actors played my dad in the movie.
Oh,
my dad was one of the first the Deacons.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Oh yeah, Mr. Hicks, we're gonna definitely get you back.
All right.
We would love to hear that story.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Definitely, Sister Philae, he's a bad man.
We're all in this together, and we have to remember that we're all in this together. And
that's right.
We walk lockstep. We walk in lockstep. Whatever we're doing, we do it together. But the thing is finding your niche so that you can walk in lockstep with everybody else.
That's right.
All right. Well, Mr. Hicks, we're going to definitely get you back soon because we want to hear about your dad and the Deacons of Defense.
Yeah, because in the movie was Johnny Forrest Whitaker plays my dad in the movie, The Deacons of the Town. And it's on HBO. You can look it up.
Right, right.
Yeah,
we've seen
it. We saw it. And some of us have seen it a couple of times.
Yeah, well, Forrest Whitaker plays my dad in that movie.
Wow.
Oh.
Yep. We remember it.
Yeah.
So, Brother Ray Ray, you said Mr. Hicks is something else. Now you can see why, huh?
I'm telling you. Everybody's saying they can't do nothing. This man ain't stopped talking yet. I can't do this. I can't do that. And he got it. His plate is overflowing, overtime. He probably wish it was 25 hours in the day and not 24.
You know, I know that we got to go in a minute, but a quick story is that I remember one day my grandmother was standing at her front yard, and a lady came by. And she said, "Maybelle, how you doing?" And my grandmother said, "Kicking, but not high." And so we still, you know, we can't do everything, but we got one more good fight in us left, and we got one more walk that we can walk. It might not be fast, but we can make that.
All right.
All right, I tell you.
Love it, love it. All right, Mr. Hicks. Well, again, we thank you so much for sharing. Yep, for sharing this information. And we definitely want to get you back on soon. And we'll do that. We'll do a whole session on the deacon.
All right. Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Yes, sir. And thank you again. All right, family. Well, hey, I guess we can get ready to close out with that one. I mean, with Mr. Hicks.
I tell you,
what more can we say?
He wanted to keep talking.
Well, that's okay, because we're going to get him back again, because I really want to hear about his father. Wow. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, somebody who was right there, you know, that's your father. So, I mean, the things I know that he could share with us about that is going to be incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not just reading a book or looking at a movie. You know, you're able to talk to someone that kind of seen some things.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. All right, family. Well, what we're going to do is get ready to close this session out. Before we do, going to go back to Brother Mike, see if he has something to share with us. Community Cop, of course. You can catch it on YouTube. Brother Mike, you got any updates or anything you want to share with us before we close out?
Yeah, I'll just say with respect to first with our Brother Hicks that I'm sure that he will be able to give you a lot of information that HBO either overlooked or omitted, because after all, it was a movie and it had a lot of commercial success in it. So it's not like they were just very revealing and really gave you the true facts around everything that happened. And I'm pretty sure he can give us information that was omitted. And
absolutely.
So I'm looking forward to that. I'll just say with respect to going from everything from like Malcolm's, you know, commemoration, which we had again this year. It was a reduced number, but we had a successful commemoration, to now the Juneteenth. And I remember, I think it was last year this time, the sister that came on and was talking about Juneteenth really didn't have much, not really much information about Juneteenth. So I stepped in and kind of pulled her coat to a lot of the things that, you know, really went on with Juneteenth. And we just always need to know that we freed ourselves, to keep it short. We freed ourselves. Right. And for black men, after freeing black men and women in America, to to go on a sojourn to Texas, where the word was that the Confederacy's last stand was going to be Texas, where Confederate officers from all over had convened and decided to go to Texas, and that the leadership, various generals and colonels, met in Texas, and they told the people in Texas to keep your slaves, maintain your slaves, and that they were not going to release them from bondage. And for over 20,000 black men to volunteer to go there to destroy that last bastion of then white supremacy in the form of badges of slavery, for them to volunteer to go there to that was nothing short of incredible. So you had the 9th, the 10th, you know, the 10th is were renowned as the Buffalo Soldiers, but the 9th, who was great now, all the way to 10th, the 24th, the 25th, the 31st, and so many other, as they were called then, colored troops, for them to descend on Texas and make it personal to free all the black people in Texas. And my mother's from Texas, and my father's from Orangeburg, South Carolina. So, you know, I guess in a sense I got some skin in the game. So for them to go into that area and free all the black people is a story that they will never tell. They'll let you celebrate Juneteenth. You can celebrate Juneteenth, but even whether here in the North or the South, they won't admit to you how those 20,000 black men went there after fighting the war, went to Texas and chased all these white generals and all their thousands of men, chased them out of Texas, chased them into New Mexico, chased them all the way, and they ended up, most of them, in Arizona, which wasn't a part of the America at that time. Chased them all the way there. That story they never talk about. So they'll give you the part about black people getting the news about being free.
Right.
They don't tell you that black soldiers did it. They say, we got the news. And I've heard black professors who know better say that lie about, we got the news, we heard we was free. And we, as if because you hear you free, you can walk away from your plantation. It ain't going to be a problem. Once you hear you free, oh, I'm free now, and you can walk away freely. And black professors betray our people by not giving us the proper examples of real heroism, real fight, the real fighting spirit that our Haitian brothers had. And they fail in not giving us that real history. So, you know, this is a great time to reveal that history, that we fought and freed ourselves. And nothing is more indicative of that than Juneteenth.
Oh.
Right on the heels of the Civil War, and then do Juneteenth. And that just shows you, as Ray Ray would say, we some bad motor scooters.
If Harry Jones was still here, he left us too early. He was a, bad dude. Harry, that brother would be laying it down.
Wow.
Oh, he was among our best ever.
Left us too soon.
Wow. So we have to connect with the other brother that Mr. Hicks turned us on to. We're going to have to connect with him.
Yeah.
Well, he has a, I just YouTubed him. He has a lecture on Juneteenth on YouTube.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I just posted it on my Facebook page.
Okay, great.
And Sister Felicia, did you find out? I'm trying to still see how to download on Our Black Truth.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you reminded me, by the way. I forgot. My apologies. I will definitely, I'm going to take a note. I'm going to put it on my calendar to contact the brother, because I'm sure once you connect with him.
I keep emailing, and I want to download some. I want to download Mackie, and we could definitely could put Community Cop on there. And
Of course, that
has to be. We have to push that, and I forgot to mention it too to brother to Hicks. Yeah, Mr. Hicks.
Okay, I'll definitely call the brother tomorrow. I'll figure it out eventually,
you know.
Yeah, but no, I don't want you to have to figure it out. That's the man. I mean, he knows this technology back and forth. So, you know, we need to, hey, listen, if Mr. Hicks can tell you the hashtag and the Instagram and all of that.
Man. Man,
he
at his age, he's still going strong.
That's right.
He didn't miss a beat. He didn't stutter. He didn't stutter nay once. He knew exactly what he was talking about.
Yes, indeed.
He did not stutter.
Yeah.
He tells you all the social. He said, I know some people not on social media, so you can just call me.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's a beautiful thing. So now we know. When we start hearing people talk about, I don't know how to do this.
I can't do this. and Sister Filet, what make it so bad? It's 12 o'clock at night, and he's still talking, and everybody else sleeps. I'm tired. 12 o'clock at night, he's still going strong.
We can't get
nobody to log on the Blog Talk for Sister Filet. Everybody sleep. Man, still going strong.
We got Mr. Hicks, so it's okay. We all right.
Everybody else is Mr. Tricks, but we got Mr. Hicks.
Well, family, we're going to close this out with a great one. Brother Mike, tell them how they can tune in to Community Cop.
Well, we'll just keep it simple. Just go to YouTube and put in Community Cop, and you see.
All of them will come up.
You can go back. You can just go to YouTube and just if you want to them to come to you, if you want the shows just to come to you when they come out, just subscribe. Mm-hmm. And when you subscribe, it'll come right to you automatically. So
automatic.
So just subscribe to Community Cop on YouTube, and you'll see that we not only deal with law enforcement issues, but we deal with politics, we deal with whatever's happening on the ground, and certainly we get into some history, which is always important, and make it relative and germane to what's going on right now. So. Just go to Community Cop and you'll see what we talk about.
All right. And also, of course, check out Sister Keisha, Brother Tad, Brother Ishay with Thorough Black Talk. Of course, they're on every Thursday at 8 o'clock. Also on YouTube, Thorough Black Talk. Or you can catch all of the episodes again. Just go to YouTube and put in Thorough Black Talk, and you'll be able to, look at them at your convenience at any time. All right, family, we're going to get ready to close this session now. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just wanted to tell you that that right now the MACD group, they're doing renovations right now where we hold our meet. But mm-hmm. we are planning on having we bringing in the Irritated Genie. We was getting ready to have Io Kamathi, you know, the Irritated Genie, right before mm-hmm. this COVID stuff hit. We was planning on having him. So he's he said as soon as y'all are ready, he told us that, you know, he would love just to come to New York. So we said, okay, here's what. As soon as we start back, we're going to get you here to New York.
Yeah.
Whether the crowd is limited or not, we're going to bring you in. And he said he's going to do an expose, among other things, on the COVID. He has a lot of inside information. Him and, you know, and you know, so I won't get ahead of myself by telling you some of the things that, but I'll just say that he's ahead of the game and knows a lot of inside truths on this COVID stuff, and he's going to really lay it all out. I know he normally is talking about the attack, of our youth in terms of not only homosexuality, but the aspect pertaining to children, you know. So,
The pedophilia.
The pedophilia, pardon me, yes.
Mm-hmm.
The pedophilia,
mm-hmm.
You know, he really emphasizes that. But he's going to talk a great deal about COVID, and I'm sure he'll get into some of the different ways that pedophilia and homosexuality, the emasculation of black men, I'm sure he'll have a little bit of all of that in the lecture, but that's going to be coming real soon next month.
Great, great. All right. Well, Brother Mike, keep us posted on that so that once the date is scheduled, you know, we'll make sure we share it with our family here. So just, you know, keep us up on as you lock in the date. Let us know.
Yeah, we'll give you the date, and he's going to do an East Coast swing. He's planning on doing Baltimore, so I don't know.
He's going to do Baltimore with Darren. He's definitely going to do Baltimore at the
Good.
Darren said it today. He's definitely going to do that. We looking to go. I'm looking to do that. Go down there too.
Yeah, he's going to do Baltimore. He's going to do something in the D.C. area. He's coming to New York. And he's even going to Atlanta with it. He's going to go to Atlanta, and he has a lot of detractors in Atlanta, as you well know, because that's the black capital of homosexuality. So so there's a lot of detractors in Atlanta, but he said he's going to go there also with the message. So. He's going to do the East Coast. So well, as soon as we got that information, we will definitely pass it to you.
Great, great. Okay, looking forward to him. And let him know he's welcome to come on New Day as well.
I'm telling that. He'll do it.
Great.
I will tell him that.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. All right, family. Well, we're going to get ready to close this session out. It's been another great conversation, lots of powerful information, and we got a new day family member, Mr. Hicks.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to definitely have Men Black with us very, very soon. At any rate, family, we're going to close this session out. And you know what we say right about now, we're going to leave you as we oftentimes greet you. That's in the spirit of Mod and Hotep. Remember, put on your calendar, September 4th, we're coming to the United Nations to begin this process. It's a process. It's not just a rally. It's not just a mass assembly. It's part of a strategic operation that we'll start revealing a little more to you very soon. By the way, please also mark your calendar. We're declaring August 17th as Red, Black, and Green Flag Day. If other people can have a flag day, why can't we? There we go. So we're letting people know right now.
put on your calendar, get your flag, put it in your window, on your car, whatever. August 17th, National Red, Black, and Green Flag Day.
Tell you Ray Ray got one week. In front of his house.
I know that's right. Can you imagine what
right
that could look like?
House.
Can you imagine what that could look like all over the country? Woo-wee. We'll
yeah,
see.
I got a big, Mr. Filet, I got a big flag.
Oh,
and
right.
When the wind is blowing, like, yeah. You can see, Sister Empress, you can see it all the way down the block. When the wind is blowing, you already know where his house is because the flag is blowing.
It ain't
no
little
right.
Flag. It ain't no little flag.
The white folks gonna steal that flag one day. They gonna get tired of that thing waving, and they gonna steal it or something.
Well, let's
and
see how many more we can get.
Sad thing about it, they don't even the they don't put the Caribbean flags honoring the Caribbean Day Parade no more. Nobody's putting the red, black, and green flag. I mean, it's just a shame, especially in Bed-Stuy.
Well, as the saying goes, we the ones we've been waiting for. So
not a flag in sight.
There it is. So we ain't waiting for nobody else to do it. We gonna do it.
Not
right.
A flag in sight, and at least have your flag out.
That's right. So mark it on there. August 17th, RBG Day. All right, family. All right. Well, you know what we say. We're going to leave you as we greet you in the spirit of modern Hotep. But remember, there will never be any peace at all until there's truly some justice. And we're talking about holistically, irrefutably, justice for our people. Because y'all know what we say. If there's no justice, there's no what, family?
No justice, no peace.
No peace. All right. All right, Brother All right. Mike, love you. Brother Ray Ray, love you much.
All right.
We'll talk to y'all next
love
week.
You too. Right.
Peace out.